Blog Talk Radio. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Pull Up Podcast brought to you by HoopsCritic.com. We are live on November 17th, 2015, about 3 weeks into the NBA season. We are waiting for our guest Oliver to join us, who was on with us last week. We are going to be breaking down the amazing triple-double battles that have been going on between Russell Westbrook and Rajon Rondo. It is beautiful to see the resurgence of Rajon Rondo. We are going to be talking about the lowly Rockets and how do you fix them, if it's possible. And we're going to touch on Oliver's piece regarding the top five players who are under 25 years old. This is 24 years old or younger. So if you're 25, you have missed the deadline. But we have our guest with us right now. How are we doing, Oliver?
How's it going?
We are loving it up and enjoying life. And it was a lot of great games last night. And before we get into the game that will segue between two teams, one on the up and up and one on the down down, I want to talk about these triple doubles that have been flourishing. We had one the first week, and then all of a sudden we have Rajon Rondo with three of them, three out of four games I believe it was for him, Russell Westbrook putting up a couple. These guys are just putting up stats, filling a spreadsheet, and we can't forget about Mr. Draymond Green, who also put up a triple-double this last week. And then last night, we had Brandon Knight and the Phoenix Suns put up a monstrous triple-double. What does this translate to you in terms of how can we have so many triple-doubles going on right now early in the season? Do you think it has to do with the style of play that teams are kind of running now? They're, you know, guards are required to do more on the, you know, the defensive glass because nobody truly has a big center anymore.
Yeah, I think that's part of the case. I think that's actually most of it. You look at the teams that are playing good team defense, and really it's from 5 years ago, it's erased. I mean, the team defense aspect of the game has totally changed. You've got stretch fours all over the place now, and your centers could be someone like Andre Drummond or, even smaller than that at 6'11", maybe 6'10", and you just see a lot of small ball. So you've got the ball moving around a lot more. It makes it tougher on defense for teams to defend. And you've got just a number of different aspects of the game that have changed over the past 10 or 15 years to the point where we're getting so offensive-minded. Most teams you can expect to get in 100, 110, 115 a night, which we didn't see, you know, even 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, I know. It's really remarkable. And there's a couple of triple-doubles that Russell Westbrook put up that really stuck out to me, actually both of his triple-doubles. They both came, one was under 28 minutes, and the other one was in 35 minutes. And in that 35-minute performance, he had 17 rebounds. And these turnovers aren't even high either. You know, he had 6 and 1 and 5 and another, but, you know, if you're putting up double-digit assists, you know, that's kind of a respectable assist-to-turnover ratio that you kind of take it as is. Usually when a player gets a triple-double, it translates into a win. We've had 8 of them so far this season, and the records for those teams with the player getting a triple-double is 6-2. So, you know, these players are, you know, not just filling up stat sheets and, you know, benefiting their own personal stat book, but they're also translating in wins, too, and it just shows you how important, especially guys like Rajon Rondo and Russell Westbrook. But let's stick on Russell Westbrook right here for a minute, because I feel like he's probably the most criticized player in the NBA. I'd say now, it was LeBron prior to him winning, but Russell Westbrook has to be the most criticized player in all of basketball within the past 3 to 5 years. And Durant is probably the most praised player. And I always had a joke that when the Thunder win, it's because of Durant. When the Thunder lose, it's because of Westbrook. And I don't believe that, but that's just the general public opinion of those two players on the same team.
Yeah, it certainly is. And I definitely see where you're coming from with that. You know, you see Russell Westbrook, who's basically averaging a triple-double this season. It's incredible. I mean, he's efficient and completely in the MVP conversation as far as I'm concerned. I didn't think last year was an anomaly per se, but I certainly didn't expect to see him continue to do what he was doing last season to this season. And you see, I think in a lot of ways, Russell Westbrook comes into the fold a little bit later than Durant was. And so Durant was kind of the guy at the helm. He obviously the go-to guy. And when Russell Westbrook comes into the game, at least in the first couple of seasons, and I think this is where this comes from, in the first couple of seasons, you saw Westbrook take away touches from Durant in certain areas and certain aspects of the game where fans and people who really don't know the game or didn't understand what they were trying to do were looking at it as if Russell Westbrook was essentially taking the ball away from a guy who was in the MVP conversation in Kevin Durant. And so
scoring
I think
titles.
A lot of that, exactly, scoring titles, et cetera, comes from, you know, 2, 3, 4 years ago when Russell Westbrook and KD were not as, you know, not as outspoken about their teamsmanship or you know, outspoken about each other or their like for each other as much. I think it was kind of painted as they dislike each other or one was taking more touches from the other or vice versa. And so now you've got this good chemistry going between the two of them, or at least it seems that way. Even when Durant is out or Westbrook is out, they seem to take on the load and play a lot better. But I still think he's criticized because of those 2 or 3 years ago situations, if that makes sense.
Right. You make a great point. So if the roles reverse, you know, if Russell Westbrook emerged as the MVP candidate prior to Durant becoming an MVP candidate, that, you know, you could absolutely agree that the roles would probably be reversed in this situation. But I just one last point on Russell before we segue over to the Kings for a second hand and their resurgence since their player-only meeting is I love the fact that Russell Westbrook is putting up 10 assists a game, and it's just going to shut everybody up who says he's a scoring point guard, he's not a facilitator. He's proving everybody wrong right now, and it's fun to see. So, all you Russell Westbrook fans, he's doing this for you guys this season. But let's flip over to the Kings here, because coming into the season, I was big on the Kings because I look at the talent, and I always looked at a guy like Rajon Rondo, and DeMarcus a little bit less than I do with Rondo in this situation is, you know, the issues that Rajon Rondo has always had in terms of, you know, coaching or arguments and you know, not getting along. It wasn't about him getting more shots. It wasn't about more playing time. It was always about how to win the game. And I don't mind those kind of players who argue and you know, disagree with, you know, teammates or coaches on how to win a game, because I think they all want the end result. It's kind of it's almost like politics to me, where, you know, you have Republicans and Democrats arguing for things, but I think at the end of the day, everybody wants the same thing. You know, everybody wants to be prosperous and healthy and, you know, not be under attack. You know, at the end of the day, everybody wants the same thing, and that's how I kind of view Rondo and DeMarcus to a lesser extent. The reason I say lesser extent because I think some of his tirades have, you know, not been warranted, especially past couple seasons. The one he did against Carl, I don't warrant it, but I understand why. You know, you lost 6 in a row. Then you flip out. You're tired of losing. You blame the coach, which you should have just blamed the whole locker room. Should have just screamed at everybody in the locker room. But they had their player-only meeting, went on to win 3 in a row, and they're looking like a much better team right now.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. And, I mean, going on to your point, I mean, you know, George Karl has had this, weird way of getting guys to buy in. And I think that it will start to work at some point in Sacramento. Obviously, they're on a little bit of a streak now. Rajon Rondo is playing better. Rajon Rondo is an excellent point guard, I think, in this league and really doesn't get enough credit for what he does.
You've seen it. I agree with you 100%. That's, I mean, yeah, he had his downfall, and people forget his downfall in Boston was kind of a result of an injury. I mean, he tore an ACL, and you know, just was banged up and, you know, injury ridden, and came back and played with a bunch of, you know, young kids and new coaching, and it just wasn't the right situation. Goes to Dallas, you know, halfway through a season, a team that was making a playoff push, and his style, in my opinion, doesn't work with what Carlisle does, and I get why it didn't work there. And even Jason Kidd had issues starting with Carlisle early on, because Carlisle is a very controlling head coach, especially with his point guards. And, you know, going back to what they were arguing about, it wasn't really arguing about playing time. It was arguing about how to win the game and what plays to run, to be successful. But I agree, and I'm happy that Rajon Rondo has finally bounced back and, you know, working his way back into that, you know, top 5, top 10 point guard in the league conversation.
Exactly. Yeah, no, he's done a great job. And, you know, give George Karl some credit here. I do think that even though he's going to have his tirades and Boogie Cousins may not be happy all the time, he's going to get W's for this team, and I definitely fully expect to see them in the playoff picture. Even this season, I expect them to be in that playoff picture. You've seen George Karl in the past with his Supersonics and the Denver Nuggets. Even though players have been pissed off or angry or upset, he seems to somehow get them to ride the ship per se and get wins where they shouldn't be getting them. And you know, obviously he's led teams to playoff appearances before. So this is typical George Karl kind of stuff that happens. It's a little overwhelming, obviously, with the DeMarcus Cousins stuff, but definitely I love what I'm seeing from Rondo.
Right, and you know, he's going to get them to the playoffs, I think, either this year or next year if he sticks around. They're just a very talented team. We've seen some underachievers in the West, which we'll get to in a moment here. But I guess my question to you would be is what do you expect if they make it to the playoffs? What do you expect there? I mean, because for me, I kind of expect a five-game series and knocked out in the first round. That's kind of how I'm seeing the Sacramento Kings. Obviously, they'd be a lower seed, and they'd be playing, you know, if they're the eighth, they get Golden State or, you know, San Antonio, the Clippers. They're going to be playing a team that's just very, you know, much deeper than they are and more skillful.
I think they can, I mean, as shocking as this may sound, I think they can do games, six-game series, potentially even a seven-game series, depending on who they're playing and the matchups they have. I mean, DeMarcus Cousins is a matchup nightmare for any center in the league right now. And then you've got, paired with that, Rajon Rondo, who can create and make opportunities better for his teammates. The problem is, really, a little bit of inexperience on this roster. You've got, you know, nobody really on the bench to really look to either score or play defense. And then the other issue, more or less, is health. If Rajon Rondo, Boogie Cousins, and Rudy Gay can all stay healthy, then you're looking at a team that may be able to make, you know, a six- or seven-game push against one of these teams like the Warriors or the San Antonio Spurs. But, yes, you clearly, after the first five guys on the court, you really don't have much to look to on that bench and say, yeah, this guy's going to give you, you know, 15, 20 minutes and go against, you know, whoever you're pulling off the bench, like an Andrew Bogut, or you could go down the list of guys on the, either the Warriors or the Spurs. You're just not going to get – they're going to be matchup nightmares as far as 6 through 10 on those rosters.
Right, and another team that is showing their lack of bench right now, they are, I think, 4-7, if I'm not mistaken, at the current moment, lost by double digits to a quote-unquote fringe playoff team in the East. I don't consider them a fringe playoff team. I think they're a lock to make the playoffs this year, as they did last year. And that's the Houston Rockets, who got embarrassed by the Boston Celtics. And the Rockets have not held any team out of their 11 games so far to under 100 points this year. And our good friend Josh Eberle posted some stats I want to read to you about James Harden this year. And this is shocking for a guy. Typically, when somebody is second in the MVP voting, they usually come back stronger to get that, you know, I mean, it's usually motivation to get that award. He's gone the opposite direction. And, you know, the issues early on was his three-point shooting, which, you know, he was taking way too many of them and shooting them at such a poor rate. But here's some stats for Rocket fans to sit on, or just fans of the NBA, about James Harden. He leads the league in missed shots at 140. He's second in turnovers at 53. And the Rockets are minus 8.6 when he plays and minus 5.6 when he sits. So a whole three-point difference when he's sitting in the Rockets' favor when he sits. So what do you kind of translate that to in your mind as to – is this just him trying too much or trying to do too much for this team and not just letting the game come fluidly to him? Or do you just think this is just a product of his game that, you know, he does need the ball to be effective and he's just not being effective as we speak?
So, yeah, I think there's – I think he does need the ball to be effective. And we've seen it in the past where he's played with Oklahoma City and been that guy off, you know, either the sixth man or potentially starting and really had his struggles. You know, there was no real fluidity with where he was playing, how he was playing. And so there is an issue there. But I think the big thing that hit to me was their defense. Their team defense is awful. It's bad, bad, bad. And the thing that was mentioned, actually, I saw this over Twitter at some point, was Dwight Howard. This season, he's 56th out of 60th in rim protection in field goal percentage among big men. Basically, when guys are nearby the rim, they're shooting 60%, which is good for fourth worst out of 60 big men in the league right now. Last season, he was like 11th out of 80. So that's part of their issue. Their team defense is awful. James Harden, obviously, clearly, while he may be a little bit improved over seasons prior as far as defensive efforts go, I just don't see the effort. Like, there's just a lack of effort. The guys I saw, even against the Celtics, the effort there from the Houston Rockets against the Celtics team that they should be able to beat, Yes, a playoff team potentially, but still, they should be able to ride right with them. You see guys like Ariza, guys like Harden, they just sink their heads. I'm not going to go back for this fast break. I'm not going to play team defense. It's all over the place. And you've got Mikhail coming out earlier and saying the same thing. So there's something bad going on, I think, beyond the numbers. And I think you've just got too many guys who want the balls, basically the ball in their hands. And there isn't enough to go around. And so, you've just got an issue, basically. Lawson, Harden, and Dwight Howard all are used to being focal points of their respective teams. And so you've got just not enough to go around. And they've got to have an adjustment period. I heard Amin of ESPN basically compare them to the 2010 Heat, in which we basically saw three ball-centric guys come together and have to make adjustments to get basically what he said was a hierarchy. So you basically, who's going to be your one, who's going to be your two, and who's going to be your three, your go-to guys basically on your team. And it took them like, if you remember correctly, or I remember, it was like 3 or 4 months down the season before they really got rolling. And even then they weren't, they weren't totally ready, and then they get to the playoffs and they make that big playoff run because of the talent they have on their team. And so I think that this team will be just fine. We've just got to give it time. Give them 3 to 4 months, maybe around the All-Star break or so. Let them play through it. Let them figure out what their roles are and what the system looks like. And let's see what they can do in the playoffs, because I think this could be an interesting playoff run for the Houston Rockets if they decide to pick it up here.
Yeah, no, it's definitely interesting, and they're not passing the eye test, as you pointed out. Their team defense is horrible. Dwight is just not a factor anymore in the paint, and it's a combination, in my mind, it's a combination of, he's just not as strong and he's not as quick anymore. And if he's slower now, he needs to bulk up more to be able to push people around. I mean, Sellinger and Olynyk were able to seal him with no problem last night in that game. And it's kind of sad. I know he's dealing with a back, and if anybody's ever had back injuries, they know. And they're probably telling me to shut up, Jacob. But it's not an easy injury to deal with. it ended careers earlier than they probably should have. But it's just very interesting. But to me, what was interesting about that game is the lack of – I don't want to say will, but the game was tied in that third quarter. And then the Celtics felt disrespected. I don't know if you saw the quotes from the Celtics players on. They really turned it up after that. And it was when Amir Johnson went for a layup and, basically got tackled out of bounds. And then I forget who it was. It might have been Capella or somebody stood over him. Technicals are thrown around. And that kind of motivated the Celtics to, really play for each other. And it really was a tale of two teams last night. You had one team that, the ball movement was stagnant outside of when the bench came in, late in that fourth quarter when the game was basically out of reach. And then you had a team like the Celtics who are just playing unbelievable team basketball right now. If someone has a bad game, they're going to not play as many minutes. Someone else is going to come off the bench and play. And no one's sulking about that. The players on the Celtics team understand this. They're playing together, and when their number's called, they're going to give everything they have. And when they're not called, they're going to stand and cheer for those other players who are giving everything they have. And it's really remarkable, just the tale of two teams here. And so my question to you is, how much are you buying this Celtics team? And, what we've seen through the first 10 games are 6-4, won 3 very impressive wins over playoff teams in the last 3 games. Really turned it up, dealt with some injuries early on, players missing a game here and there. What is your ceiling and what is your floor for this Boston Celtics team, knowing what we know now 10 games in?
I think the Celtics can be 4 or 5 seed in the East. I like them a lot. I think that obviously Brad Stevens is a great coach. The real difference I see this season from prior seasons is team defense. And guys like Crowder, Smart, Amir Johnson, Olynyk playing hard and playing good team-oriented defense, and they want it. They want to fight every night, and obviously you basically quoted that. But I've been really impressed with the way they're playing team defense, and especially a guy like Olynyk. He has an 85.1 defensive rating, which, based on points allowed per possession, is just ridiculous. They've got Smart, Johnson, Crowder, and Olynyk, I believe, in the 94th percentile or higher in defensive ranking, which is just absurd. They're creating more defensive effort than I've ever seen out of a Celtics team previously. And then on top of that, you put into the fact that they're creating, I don't know if you saw the stat, they're creating tons of turnovers, though. And
right.
Winning the turnover battle is crucial in the NBA for success and for winning basketball games. So if they continue to win the turnover battle like they have, I mean, they're creating steals on, I think it's like 18 or 19% of all their possessions on defense, which is just, I mean, the 20%, basically 20% of every time you have an offensive player come down the court, it's a steal. That's nuts. I mean, in one of five plays, it's just crucial for success in basketball and winning basketball games. And so I think the Celtics are the real deal. You do not want to go against them in the playoffs, because this is a team that if they catch fire right and they've got their guys pulling on all cylinders, firing on all cylinders, you've got a really, really bad, bad, bad team to play, because honestly, you've got size, you've got depth, you've got youth, which also provides confidence. Brad Stevens has done an excellent job on defense, like I said, coaching-wise. Offensively, they look sound, shooting the ball well. And Marcus Smart, if he can come into his own, gosh, I mean, this team is going to be really dangerous in the playoffs.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right there. And just a little more stats for everybody out there. They're fifth in pace, fourth in defense efficiency, and sixth in points differential. But to further your point there when you were discussing their ability to steal the ball at you know, an alarming rate, it's amazing watching it how they do. They recover so well. They rotate so well, and they're essentially just jumping in these passing lanes here that, you know, most of their steals come from rotating so quickly that the other team is just not considering that those, you know, rotations are happening at the time or what have you, and it's really something beautiful to watch, and that's also a reason why their pace is so great, because the second they get a turnover, they're turning around and sprinting up the court there. But one more aspect of your, you know, the defensive point there. There is nothing scarier than a lineup of Smart, Bradley, and Jay Crowder, which they were running early often. It kind of hurt them offensively a little bit. And Stevens is still tweaking with the lineup. He's still trying to figure out that perfect balance. I think putting Isaiah in the starting lineup has helped them a lot with that scoring, especially early on. Although they're still dropping early in the games, you know, against the Thunder, I believe they were down like 15-3. I think in the Rockets game, they were down like, you know, 12-5. You know, so they're still falling behind early, but where they're going to win these games is through their depth and in the second half, where they're just wearing you down. They're running, you know, 8, 9, 10 guys, you know, around 15-30 minutes each, and they're just going to constantly run on you and run on you. And the second someone's tired, Brad has someone else coming in there to run on and run you. Where these other teams are relying on 2, 3 guys playing 35, 40 minutes a game, and it really wears on you. And it's really remarkable to see. And I'm at the point where I kind of hope that Danny doesn't make a trade, just to see how far, you know, this group of guys can really go. But it's so far it's remarkable. And I agree. I think in my article that I posted on every Tuesday, by the way, check it out, I think I said, you know, they're going to be a 4-6 seed team. I wouldn't be shocked if they got that third seed, but I see them in that 4-6, which is kind of where you have them as well. But you also had an article come out recently on hoopscritic.com where you looked at the top five players under 25. And we'll just kind of run through these names here just so people can see. And then we can talk about some of the guys who might have been omitted. At number five, you had Andre Drummond, who has been playing out of this world right now. Probably one of the best big men in the league, or I should say is one of the best big men in the league. Number four, you had Andrew Wiggins, who struggled out the gate early on this season, but has really come into a groove lately, especially on the scoring end. I'd still like to see him do a little bit more in terms of passing and rebounding, but his scoring has finally fallen. Number three, you have Bradley Beal, who might be leaving that team next year if they work something out with Durant, and you know they didn't really work on an extension there, but that's another topic for another day. Number two, you have Anthony Davis, which people will probably scratch their head listening to this podcast. So now, why do you have Anthony Davis number two? Isn't he supposed to be the best thing that's ever happened in basketball? No, the best thing that's ever happened in basketball, and I agree with your ranking here, although I joke with you that Marcus Smart should be number one. The real number one is the real number one is basically Marcus Smart on drugs with a better shot, and that's Kawhi Leonard.
And Marcus Smart could get there for sure. I mean, maybe not number one, but he certainly could get there. He needs to improve his shot-making ability and really needs a bigger role on this Celtics team before I can kind of definitively say that he would be one of those top five. But, yeah, Kawhi Leonard is just an excellent player. Off the ball, on the ball, what he means to that Spurs team, which, I mean, has done well over the years, but really without him, they are just not the same team.
Right, but I want to talk about Kawhi Leonard because, you know, he's not going to put up 30 points a game. He could if he needs to, but he won't. I think he's on I don't feel like people understand his value because of where he plays. And I know some people will counter-argue that and say, well, you know, what if he was on the 76ers right now? Would he be this good? And I'd say yes. I mean, his shooting would probably go down because he'd be forced to take more shots, and you know, his shot selection would probably be not as efficient as he'd like, obviously, because he'd be forcing more stuff. But you can't teach the things he does, and that's, you know, especially in the defensive end. He's, you know, reigning defensive MVP. I think he has the potential to be, you know, one of the best players of all time. And, you know, I know I'm getting ahead of myself because people look at stats like, oh, you know, he's not even close to scoring as Kobe and Jordan, or, you know, he's not going to have these awards as this person or that person. But what made you select Kawhi Leonard as your number one overall under 25 player in the NBA?
Well, I've watched a couple games live of him this season, and really the thing that stands out to me is what the Spurs offense does with and without him, and then what the Spurs have to do on defense against some of the best, you know, small forwards in the game. I mean, what he's done defensively, let's just put it in perspective. I know we've probably talked about this a couple times, or you have, but he held the likes of Durant, Joe Johnson, and Carmelo Anthony to 11 of 41 shooting combined. And I don't know if there's any other player that can do that. And when you know, you'll always be in a game if you can hold guys like that to under 25% shooting. You'll always be in the game because they're going to take a ton of shots. And then on top of it, his efficiency on offense. I mean, he's shooting 52-53% from the field this season, and a lot of those are on jump shots, difficult shots. And clearly, it's his team. I mean, this is one of the best teams in the NBA right now. And he's 24 years old. He's come from a place where, you know, nobody expected him to. I mean, Pop really molded him from a power forward into a small forward. And that's kind of what he played in college. And he's totally molded his game into a great defensive small forward. He may go down as the best small forward defensively that we've ever seen. And that's not to discount LeBron or anybody else that could have played that position.
Right.
But really, he's holding a lot of these guys.
It's truly remarkable. You're absolutely right. And, you know, I can't wait to see him in his quote-unquote prime because he's, like, you know, their prime typically – the age of 26 is my rule of thumb for an NBA player's prime. And I really think that, you know, he's obviously a couple years away from that. So it's curious to see how much better a guy like this can get. And, you know, I truly believe he's going to be the reason that Popovich does not retire after Duncan, which is what everyone theorized for many, many years, until the emergence of this kid who came from San Diego State that nobody even heard of and, you know, drafted mid to late first round. And it just really goes to show you how a franchise's ability to scout but also coach together, what it can pay in. And I think we're seeing a mini version of that in Boston, you know, with their GM and coaching ability up there. They kind of replicated what R.C. Buford and Greg Popovich has been able to do for so, so long. I mean, you look at their other stars and they're all, you know, none of them are lottery picks, you know, Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, all these guys are late the first, heck, even some second round draft picks. And, you know, Kawhi Leonard was drafted, I want to say, was he 9, if I'm not mistaken? I forget where he was. He was close to top 10 or top 15 when they traded George Hill to the Pacers. But he was not like a top 5 pick in the draft, or, you know, wasn't considered to be one of the best players in the draft at that year. But it's definitely interesting to see, and I can't wait to see how much better this guy could get, because I cannot stop gushing about Kawhi Leonard. And, you know, I don't have T-shirts of his face on it for no reason at this point. But, Oliver, this will do it for us. Any last things you want to plug in?
Nothing right now. I'm going to be having a new podcast here in the next couple of weeks. If you want to give that a follow, it's going to be at KO Show. I'm doing a podcast just on sports all over the place, basically. We're going to be talking to all sorts of guests and all sorts of players, coaches, GMs, et cetera. So that will be up here pretty shortly. But as always, you can just follow me on Twitter at Omaroney. That's O-M-A-R-O-N-E-Y at Omaroney. And that's about it.
All right, guys, I'll do it for us here at the Pull Up Podcast, brought to you by HoopsCritic.com. Look for more Oliver pieces on HoopsCritic.com, and we'll catch you on Thursday with Snotty Drippin'.